Hello, everyone. This is Fire Chief Paul Dowell with Albuquerque Fire Rescue. This podcast is designed to bring you helpful training and best practices and some additional resources that you can access from anywhere. So thank you for joining us and enjoy today's episode.
Alarm to Engine 7, Rescue 7, Engine 14, Rescue 14, Squad 2 and 7-8. It's going to be the intersection of Coors and Central. This is 7's District, Firebox 5613. 29 Delta 2, all units respond on EMS 1. We have a minivan versus pickup truck possible, ejected patients. All units respond on EMS 1 and advise on additional. Intersection of Coors and Central. It's for Engine 7, Rescue 7, Engine 14, Rescue 14, Squad 2, and 7-8. Possible first alarm medical.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the AFR podcast. Today, we're going to be talking mass casualty, and I am happy to be joined by Captain Rob LaPree. So, Rob, thanks for being here. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much, Andrew. I want to thank you for all your work with all these podcasts, and I'm glad to be here and share some information.
Awesome. So, you've been the 7-8 on A shift for pretty much as long as I've been an officer. When I made lieutenant, you were the 7-8. Can you just recap your career in the department? You know, what'd you do? Did you have a life before I knew you?
Sure. Yes. I've been a paramedic 24 years. I've been in EMS 28 years. I started my fire career. Well, I actually started my EMS career at Albuquerque Ambulance. I moved to Santa Fe County in 1998. I left there in 2004 as a lieutenant for AFR, lateral hire. And I was the 68th cadet class, hired with a bunch of other paramedics. We were together with the 67th. And from there, I became a pipeman medic and started upgrading on rescues. I went through all the promotions. I spent approximately 10 years on stations on Central and Battalion 2 area. And in January of 2016, I was promoted to captain, and I took the 7-8 slot on A shift.
Awesome. Yeah, so one of the things I like, you just laid out like all your experience, right? You've been there, done that. But one of your approaches to 7-8 that I've seen is you keep it simple, right? So you're not like all nerdy and getting in the weeds on physiology with us. You try to keep it simple for us, give us like simple little teaching points that we're able to take away.
I like to keep it simple. I don't think you have to be, I always joke about myself, I don't think you have to be really smart to be a good paramedic. You just need good communication skills and be good with people. And as the simpler you can make it, the easier it is for the guys. And I'm here to make their job easier, make it more effective, and make them more autonomous. I'm not there to run the call. I want them to run it, and I'm there to support what they need to do that.
Awesome. And you've got a similar approach to mass casualty events. So luckily I'm on A shift, you know, I've already heard it, but the whole reason for this podcast is to distribute this out to everybody in the department. So we'll get into your simple approach to MCIs, but we're going to set you up with a little scenario here just to walk people through it. So say engine 13, rescue 13, squad 2, they're dispatched out to a 29 Delta I-40 westbound. Engine 13 is the first on scene. They roll up. They see a four-car MVA on the right shoulder. They see airbags. They see moderate intrusion to the driver's side door, say. And there is one of the cars is up on the passenger side. So if you're engine 13 officer, you know, what do you need to do at this point?
If you're engine 13 officer, hopefully right now you're already on an EMS channel. Hopefully you've already received that. I would like everyone on separate comms off of alarm. Next step, get your guys out, leave the bags in the truck, go walk around the scene, and let's do a head count so we can develop a triage report. All the greens are walking around, gather them up, see who's entrapped, see who can't walk, and try to do the red, yellow, green triage report and get that out to everyone so we know. And that'll dictate your resources that you're going to request.
Awesome. Yeah. And so, you know, first on the engine, you want to paint the picture a little bit too, right? So I kind of stole the size up from you when I was like describing what we're rolling up to, but what would that size up sound like, for example, if you're engine 13, how detailed should it be? We're all used to the blue card and, you know, what they want to hear on a fire size up, but from a, say a car wreck, what are you wanting to hear if you're a 7-8 responding to that scene?
What I would like to hear is like something like this: engine 13 arriving on scene. We do have multiple vehicles. We have one on its side. It looks like we have multiple patients. Stand by for a triage report. Let us get out and do this, and I'll get right back to you.
Okay.
Already, I know it's a pretty serious scene. I'm waiting for a very developed triage report, meaning a lot of patients compared to normal.
Yeah. And if you got, say, Rescue 13 is rolling up right behind you.
Oh, if Rescue 13 is rolling up?
Yeah, you're the engine, you give the size up, you take command, and the rescue happens to be pulling up right behind you.
I'm gonna have Rescue 13 just start EMS. I want them to start an EMS group. I know that's not quite red card, but we're gonna build on that EMS group, so I would still make them a group. They'll never be alone. We're gonna end up adding resources under them, and they're gonna become the EMS group.
Okay, and you talked about, you know, the first benchmark in these MCIs. We got two benchmarks. The first one is to get that triage report out there, right? So we've got our different triage criteria that we're supposed to go off of. We've got walking wounded, they're going to be green. If somebody's not breathing and you put an OPA in and it doesn't help them, they're just going to be a black. And then we go into our different red criteria. So we have respirations above 30, they're going to be a red. No radial pulse, they're going to be a red. Or altered mental status, they're going to be a red. Anybody that doesn't fit into those criteria, they're going to be a yellow. So, you know, is that how detailed we should be? Say we pull up on this four-car MVA, are we going through counting respers? How detailed are we going to be on the initial size-up just to get the resources going?
I don't really expect huge detail. It's important to note that these triage reports change all the time during a scene. We never end up with the same amount of colors that we started with. So I would just like to know who's walking and then who we think are reds and who we think are yellows. And they'll get re-triaged, so it's not critical, but it does, it doesn't change the resources. You know, the number of heads, the number of bodies we're going to transport changes the resources. So whether they're yellow or red, there's still a transport, and that's what we need to take a crack at it and just remember to do the triage report. It sucks to have to prompt for it.
Yeah.
We should all be doing it.
How quick do you want that?
As soon as it can be reasonably accurate. You should be able to do a decent triage report in a couple of minutes after walking around a scene.
Okay, so you're going to show up, give your size up, whether you're doing the triage report or you're assigning a rescue to do it. You're going to want that within a few minutes. Just as soon as somebody can get there, walk around, do a 360, figure out what's going on, you're going to want that triage report right after that.
Absolutely.
And whether, you know, how exactly accurate it is, you're not as worried. Just a general idea, hey, you know, whether it's four reds or three reds, you'd rather get that out quicker than being precise.
I would, yeah. I don't think it's worth it to waste 10 minutes to get precision on these reds or precision on the yellows. It's not worth it. I'd rather get resources going and let's figure out who needs to start going first. Let's get those immediates off the scene.
Okay, so back to this scenario on the freeway. We got four cars involved. We had Rescue 13 go around and do a triage report. They come back, you know, Rescue 13 to all units. We've done a triage report. We have one black, three reds, one yellow, and 11 greens. Do you want to hear anything else in a triage report?
No, I'd like a resource request at that time if no one's done it already. So that's a good time to get alarmed to start ordering resources based on your triage report.
Okay, and so, right, you triage, and then now you got numbers to it, right? And then you have to determine,
sure, what resources you want. And I think a good starting point, a good foundation for resources is a first alarm medical, and then start adding ambulances and or rescues to that based on your patient count. I think that's a good baseline to start.
All right, and if you know, some of you guys, if you're not studying for your test, I'll just refresh what a first alarm medical is gonna get you. So if alarm room takes a call and they know that there's gonna be more than five patients, they should automatically dispatch a first alarm medical. But that's gonna get you two rescues, two pumpers, 7-8, squad 2, 1 BC, 2 AAS, and the AAS 01. So that's going to be your first alarm medical dispatch. And as you said, you think that'll be able to handle a lot of stuff we're doing?
I think most of the stuff we do, car wrecks, 29 deltas in town, most of the stuff is captured with a first alarm medical and by adding a little bit to it. Usually ambulances and or rescues will need an additional rescue on that. I think it captures 90% of what we do.
Okay. Yeah. Because the jump from like a first alarm medical to a second alarm is pretty huge, right? You got, DC of operations and stuff. So,
right. It's pretty huge. And I like to make this, I was telling Andrew, I wanted to make this applicable to company officers, that are in charge of, you know, single resources, how to manage this stuff out of the gate. And I think that's really important. And that helps us win as a department.
All right. Yeah. So I can imagine this, not super common. This is actually a pretty extensive amount of patients, but this is easily something you could roll up on, especially if you've got some freeway in your district. I wanted to talk about the first alarm medical. You think that'll be enough to handle these patients? Again, we have 1 black, 3 reds, 1 yellow, and 11 greens. You know, after we've done our triage report, we got the resources. What are our next steps in actually handling this incident?
I would add a couple of ambulances to that and probably get an additional rescue, just because these 3 reds are going to take a lot, and you don't know how many of these greens are going to get transported. So I'd like to assign a single resource over to these greens and get them out of the way. It's important to note, and I'm not prioritizing the greens over the reds right now, but I wanted to take a moment. These green patients are dynamic, they're ambulatory, they change complaints, they can walk, they'll come and get you, tap you on the shoulder, tell you they have another complaint. So I think it's worth it for the reds that we're trying to get off the scene to assign a single resource, group up these greens and keep them in a certain area and manage their complaints. And when I say single resource, it can be an engine company, a rescue company, a squad, a ladder, whoever. Now, our priority is to get these immediates, these reds, off the scene. So let's start working on that. If we have command under control and we don't have any ambulances on scene yet and we have a good grasp of the scene, one of our rescue companies can easily leave with one of these reds right away.
So you mentioned our second benchmark is going to be the all reds transported, right? So first thing we want to do is get the triage report going, and then we're looking for all reds transported. You also talked about the greens. Now, again, you said we're trying to get those greens out of the way to control a little bit of the chaos. So if you can take them and put them in a rescue, again, sometimes it's going to be the middle of winter, sometimes it's going to be super hot out there. So we're going to want to just get them, separate them, the greens, the minor patients, from the reds, the serious patients that need to get transported off right away.
Absolutely.
Now, when we have a mass casualty incident like this, we talked about the number of patients we have. I know that we need to banner this incident, but I'm not sure what that actually does. Can you explain to everybody like the process? What does that mean when you banner something?
Sure. All the hospitals are connected with EMS computers that allow them to communicate. What a banner does is when we figure out we have 4 patients that are going to be transported, 4 or more, we can banner that call, and we should banner that call. And what it does is it opens up all the hospital doors for patients. So they can't divert because they're a trauma patient, et cetera. And then in the guideline, it talks about waves, like UNM can take the first 4 reds, and then it can move to Press and Loveless downtown, and they can start taking patients. So the gist of it is we banner for hospitals. We banner for us also, because it allows us places to put these patients. If you were to have 6 blacks on a scene, and 1 red, you wouldn't banner it, because all you have is 1 patient that's going to move. And it's important to know that. That's what a banner does. It opens up the hospital doors, all of them. So people can go everywhere, all over the city.
Awesome. And, when we're talking about bigger MCI events. We'll get into it later, but we've all heard about the triage treatment and transport. Something like this, this is four cars. It doesn't seem like we're going to need to get that deep into it. How would you expect the rest of this? So we bannered the event. We've got our first alarm medical coming. Again, we got three reds, one yellow, and these 11 greens. How do you see these patients actually getting off the scene?
Well, obviously the reds are the priority. The immediates, we have to organize them and get them off the scene. So our first resources that can transport should be taking these reds, including possibly our second rescue that's rolling in can take a red also.
And they'll just be taken like straight from where they are in that vehicle. They'll show up, AS will get there, and you'll say, hey, this is the first patient that needs to come off this scene. He's right here. Assign them to AS, and they're out the door, right?
That's correct. I like to stage the ambulances away from the scene, but reasonably close. And then as we get a patient, bring in the ambulance. They can scoop up the patient and leave the scene orderly. I try to avoid having three or four ambulances just parked on a scene with people out because I lose track of who's who. I just see people walking around. It's easier to stage them, bring them in for one patient, get them off the scene. And later on, it may be bring them in for two or three patients. Don't forget, scenes like this that could overwhelm, you know, local resources, it's important to note that to be flexible. And, you know, we can put two patients in a transport unit and get them off the scene also. And that saves us, you have to get out of that, just that framework of one patient per ambulance. You have to be flexible.
Yeah, and even more so, right? So I guess the definition of a mass casualty is you're overwhelming your resources. So some of the things we're used to doing in the field, like, you know, sending a paramedic rider to the hospital, you know, we're not going to be able to do that because you just don't have the resources. If you do that, that can actually end up doing more harm than good.
That's an excellent point, and it brings up a good point that I wanted to talk about is on these events, I try to discourage my personnel on rescues from riding in. I like to keep them available as a transport resource if needed, and they're a great resource. If we need riders, I like to pull people off the suppression units as they're available, and they can ride in with the paramedic on the ambulance or with a rescue, not to forget. So, but I try not to divide up my rescues because then you don't have any rescues. You just need more.
Yeah, and sometimes, you know, the field units aren't going to have enough, you know, hands to deal with these people, and the best thing for them is to get them to the hospital where there's going to be more help available. I can imagine on this one, we're going to have two of these reds assigned to AAS. They'll get them off the scene, and say squad two has to come and cut the person out of the other vehicle. He ends up eventually getting off scene, and now finally we've hit that second benchmark, right, of the all reds have been transported.
Sure.
So in this case, now we still have a one yellow to worry about, and we got 11 greens to worry about. It turns out like seven of those greens ended up being non-patients, and they're like, no, I'm fine. And then four of them end up wanting to get transported.
Great. So now we get to slow it down. Because we've assigned a single resource to these greens, we have a handle on who they are, who's going to get transported, and how many refusals we're going to get. So we can slow it down. We can bring in resources like another AS unit or another rescue. We can start doubling up these greens for transport and just kind of close this scene up. And that's why I like to assign a resource to those greens.
Okay. All right. So this is a car wreck on the freeway. It wasn't too crazy. We didn't get into the whole NIMS breakdown, but I wanted to get into that on the next scenario. So now we're going to get crazy with it. We're going to go big. Just think of a,
here we go,
you know, giant bus crash, you know, with crashed into a car, and now the car's on fire and it's like leaking fluid all over the place, and there's more cars involved and there's going to be extrication, or a totally different possibility. There's, say, a shooting or an explosion or something like that, and we just got patients all over the place. So we've got this is going to be a big event. What do we need to do on this as far as even the organizational structure?
So it's important to note, you know, how we start setting up these scenes, whether they're big or small, is it resembles fires a lot. You know, the initial setup has a lot to do with your success on the call. And it's good that everything is scalable. And we can just increase the scale and handle bigger events. The big thing is the basic benchmarks don't change. Be calm. Let's get our resources to the scene. And then we can start talking about NIMS.
Yeah.
If you'd like.
Yeah, let's do that. And also, you know, things are going to take a little bit longer. So if you've got six patients on the freeway, you'll be able to get the triage report out. But if you're actually counting heads and you end up with like 35 people, just everybody know that's going to take a little bit longer to get that information to everybody.
Sure. And a basic NIMS setup for this kind of situation, a large, large situation, let's say 20 some patients or in excess of that, is going to be on the top of a unified command structure. You're going to have the Sheriff's Department, APD, Albuquerque Fire Rescue. You're going to have all those agencies in there. Below that, you'll have a safety officer, a PIO, and then you're going to break off into two branches. It's basically going to be an EMS branch and a fire slash operations branch. Under the EMS, the 7-8.
Why don't we get operations out of the way real quick, sure. Since this is primarily going to be focused on the medical side. If we split it up into two branches, what's operations? What kind of stuff are they going to take care of?
Fire, fire suppression, extrication, possibly patient movement. You'll have movement crew in there assigned, that basic stuff.
Awesome, thanks. And then now we'll get into the EMS side of it, and that's what we're more used to. We used to have it in our guidelines that, you know, that recently was taken out, but we used to have it in there. We're going to set up a triage, treatment, transport, right? So
right.
The last scenario we brought up didn't necessitate all that to happen, but on the larger events, then it's very helpful to split it up this way.
Yeah, and it goes back to a lot of stuff the military does. You know, the treatment area is the casualty collection point. That's where people are brought to be treated. This large event, the EMS fellow or consortium will be part of that treatment group. But first, there's a big triage group, and the triage group needs to be flexible. It could be a geographically separated scene. You may have to do a north-south triage. You may have to do a north-south scene. Who knows what the situation is going to be? And then you're going to have a transport section where AS01 is going to be coordinating with EMS branch on the next patient to be transported. He'll be staging his units away from the scene in the direction of most of the hospitals, at least the trauma center, and it's going to go like that. You'll need a patient movement group to go get patients and bring them to the casualty collection point or the treatment area. In the guidelines, it says treatment area. And you won't have enough resources to treat all these patients where they lay, like in the prior scenario. They're going to be all over the place. So you got to get them to a central place before you can begin. Can I talk about the MCI trailer?
Yeah, let's talk about it. So say, again, this one, I'm picturing something with like 25 patients, right?
Sure.
So the last car wreck incident that we talked about, we brought up the fact that it's important to get that first alarm medical dispatch. So something like 25 patients, again, thinking about resources, what do we need to do on this?
We're probably going to up the ante, do a second alarm medical. We're going to be considering mutual aid with that. We'll need a chief on the scene.
Let me lay out what a second alarm. Yeah, this will get you. So, you know, you get something bigger and you need a lot more help than, say, this four-car MBA, and now we've got something like 25 patients. So a second alarm medical, this will get you five more AAS units. It'll get you another rescue, another pumper, a hazmat squad, BC, EMS, division commander, consortium doc, command vehicle, or that CV1, an MCI trailer, and also the DC of Ops is going to be notified. So again, this is a big deal.
It's a huge deal. And you're probably going to have to add to that as far as transport units. Don't forget, this is going to be an extended scene. So don't expect all your transport units to arrive within 5 minutes. It could be ongoing. You could be flipping units. You could be having units that are taking people to the hospital that turn right around and get in line and stage for the next group of patients. And that's why we do this in waves. You know, UNM takes the first wave and we start doing waves of patients. It's unrealistic to think that this is going to be over in 5 or 8 minutes. This could be an extended scene.
Okay, so I wanted to break it down again by the organization. So we split it up. We got operations. We got the EMS branch. And then within that, we're going to have the triage group. We've touched on all this already, but let's break it down by like triage, treatment, and transport. Let's get into triage first. So the triage group, they're going to be walking around triaging people, giving a quick treatment, like 1 minute or less, right? So what should that be limited to?
Everyone should have their triage bags out with their ribbons ready and actively trying to do an accurate triage on these people. I think we're also beyond the quick, dirty triage. This is an extended scene. You can spend a minute with a patient, open his airway, etc., do the whole RPM, and give them the right ribbon. Behind you is going to be a patient movement group that's going to be taking these people to the casualty collection point, which the 7-8 unit has tarps. We can set that up and start doing this the right way. Eventually, though, triage will be done, and that triage crew or crews will be reassigned to probably treatment area or patient movement or wherever they're needed in the scene. The triage group will kind of disappear, and you'll have ongoing triage at the treatment area.
Okay, so the initial triage, you're just treating like immediate life threats. Like if somebody's bleeding out, right, you're not going to just be like, oh, that guy's a red, and then move on, right, because he's going to bleed out. By the time you get back to him, he'll be black. So
you're going to find and fix for initial triage. You're going to open airways, put in an OPA, place a tourniquet, place a ribbon, so we know what color they are.
A good train of thought, when I was in the military, we practiced it a lot, and if you can't accomplish this treatment in under a minute, then it's too extensive, right? This is a mass casualty. There's so many patients. You're trying to help as many as you can, and if you're spending 5 minutes trying to treat a red on your initial triage, like there's other people bleeding out possibly. So again, keep that under a minute. And then once we get that initial triage, you know, that's why we have a treatment area, so we can get all these people to casualty collection point or treatment area. And on a big thing like this, we'll have a doc there, we'll have rescues there, we'll have all our equipment centralized, so you're not lugging bags, as you mentioned. You know, you're not bringing monitors and bags to 25 different people. You just set it up in the treatment area, and now once they're triaged, now you bring everybody centralized.
That's correct. The treatment area really becomes a field-like hospital. I'd like to take a moment and talk about these blacks, because it seems like as a department, sometimes we get distracted with the blacks. Blacks are blacks. They're triaged like anyone else, and then we move on. We'll also cycle back and check on the blacks and make sure we didn't miss anything. But I always look at blacks and say, do we have the resources to deal with this patient or not? If you have one black on a scene, you may be able to deal with them, one black and one red. But if you're in a mass casualty incident like this, you absolutely do not have the resources to deal with the blacks. So they just get tagged and you move on.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's even in our guidelines, it says it's going to be up to that person triaging, like determine the resources, because it could be a black or it could be a red. Again, depending on, you know, if you only have two patients, that's not overwhelming anybody. So
sure,
you're just going to go ahead and work that. And he's not a black anymore when you have the resources to work him.
Exactly. And that's all about being flexible and keeping, being reasonable with your expectations of how this thing is going to go, you know. And I don't mind dealing with a black for a while if we have the resources to do it. But on a bigger scene, we clearly don't. We have a lot bigger other problems. And we're going to do the most to save the most, right?
All right. So that's the triage part. Again, keep your treatment under a minute. And then use the RPM, so respirations above 30, no radial pulse or altered mental status, that'll turn them into a red. Then we'll talk about treatment. So you broke it up earlier. You said you could have like a north and a south. So we talked about a casualty collection point, but if you're separated by a half mile, are you going to have like litter bearers like carrying people into the central location?
You'd have to find a reasonable, closer location to set up your treatment area as I see it, you know.
And just splitting it, you know,
don't let the scene dictate you. You dictate the scene. So we make our own rules, and that gets back to being flexible. Whatever seems to work and make the most sense, let's do it. If we have to split it into two scenes, then we split it into two scenes, and we have the resources to do that.
Yeah, and if you're just like, man, this doesn't make any sense, you know, speak up, and yeah, maybe you need a better plan. Just because we said a casualty collection point on this podcast, if you need two of them because you've got like, you know, 10 people to the south, and then to the north quarter mile, you got 10 other people, like, you can have that.
Absolutely. Before this podcast started, I was talking with Andrew about, let's say, you have a bunch of greens. Let's say you have 15, 20 greens. And we talked about greens already. You could get a bus or a city bus, assign a single resource. You could load these greens in a bus, and they can do a round robin around the city, and you can start to drop them off at certain hospitals. And you could be actually communicating with the AAS-01, the transport officer, on where you're bringing them. But the point is, we're bringing them somewhere, and we got them off the scene. And in a case like this, we don't need 20 greens on a scene running around. So that's a good thing to consider. Once again, flexibility. It's important.
Yeah. All right. So that's some notes on the treatment area. Again, if the consortium doc's going to show up, that'd be a good spot for them to be.
Absolutely. Because I think that having a physician in the treatment area can prevent people from being, let's say, wrongly triaged or effective re-triage, keep someone from bleeding out that's bleeding internally, pelvic injuries, discrete bleeding, and they have the assessment skills to be a great resource in that group.
All right, and the transport. So again, back in our old guidelines, we had that the AAS-01 is gonna be a great resource for a transport officer.
Absolutely. Besides following the guidelines on like the waves and how many what hospitals can take whoever, they have better relations with the hospitals. They'll be calling charge nurses and like pre-screening patients for certain hospitals, which makes it go a lot smoother, and the hospitals love that. They know who's coming, they've been communicated with, they can get their resources fired up on that end. So it's not just about us, it's about the hospitals too. And that's why that 01 is a great resource for that.
Yeah, and for our plan, again, this is in our guidelines, but so the first four reds are gonna go to UNM. After that, you can send two reds to Press or Loveless downtown. And then the smaller hospitals, like say Loveless Women's or Caseman, they can take one red. Again, you said once you banner this event, there is no more like, hey, we're not a trauma center.
Exactly, and that's why it's important to banner. That's the effectiveness of the banner. It opens up all the hospital doors. It helps our scene because we have placement for these patients. And it's important to note, you know, I know these tertiary facilities, we sort of look at them on a daily basis as, let's say, kind of, you know, some people say urgent cares or the low-level hospitals. You know, the physicians that are working in these emergency rooms, they've all done trauma rotations. They've been there, done that. The reason they're not good trauma centers, a lot of times they don't have the facilities and the surgeons on call to deal with some of these patients. But they can do a lot of initial stabilization and treat a lot of this trauma. And what they can't, they'll ship out when time permits.
Yeah, and if there's a crisis in the city, I mean, they're going to be better than that person staying on scene.
Absolutely. Know? Yeah, they can still offer better care than we can on a treatment tarp on I-40. For instance.
Okay. Yeah. So these larger scale events, again, this one we're bringing up about 25 patients, but what you want to remember, can you just recap real quick, just organization of how do you want to break these events down? And as you mentioned a couple times, they're scalable. So what's the best organization to...
Like NIMS? Is that
what
you're
with the NIMS. So.
Sure. Well, the smaller incidents can just be, you know, an EMS group, a fire extrication group, etc., like that. You start getting into bigger events, you should start scaling up your command, requesting more resources, and doing more of a NIM setup, branches, geographic locations, stuff like that. And you just need to predict where this is going and don't ignore it. Don't wish it away. just deal with the reality that presents itself and order your units. And don't be embarrassed to order your units. They're there to help you. And we can always cancel. You know, I can't tell you how many fires there are a day that people just get canceled on. They're nothing. So we shouldn't be afraid to cancel on EMS events.
Awesome. Well, do you have any final takeaways for lessons learned or any, you know, what do you want, say, that suppression officer to get out of this podcast and some closing comments?
I just want your average frontline crew, be it rescue or suppression, to feel comfortable and confident to start this process, to identify multiple patients, to start setting some of this stuff up and building it up. And look at it like a problematic equation that you're just building. You're building blocks. You're just adding and adding and adding, and you're working through a problem. Some of these problems take a little bit. They're not going to be like a single patient that you can be done with in 10 minutes. It's a process, and hang in there just like you're managing a fire. Same deal. Communications is key. We have to ask for EMS channel on this. We may need a second one on bigger events or even attack channel. And don't be afraid to ask, like I said, for resources, for a chief, for 7-8, to call that first alarm medical. It's really important. It's underutilized, I feel. And we, a lot of times the alarm room dispatches it that way, but we need to get used to just asking for it if we think we need it.
Yeah. Awesome, Rob. Well, hey, appreciate it. I'm glad you were able to come on and share some of your experience with us. And again, thanks a lot. I think this will help the crews out there in the field.
Absolutely. Thank you, Andrew. And guys, feel free to call myself or any of the 7-8s if you have any additional questions on how to manage these events. We'd be glad to help you.
All right, guys. Thanks for listening to the AFR podcast. We'll talk to you on the next episode.